Hey, welcome back to Endpoint TV. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, and today I am going to help you deal with query string parameters. Now, if you've been trying to do RESTful services in WCF, you know that RESTful people disagree about query string parameters. Some think they're evil, you should never use them. Other people think, hey, it's okay, use them if you want to. There's a lot of opinions about this. The question is one of implementation. Should you put query string parameters in the URI template strings for your service? And if you do, how does that work? If you don't, how do you access query string parameters in the first place? So in this episode, I'm going to talk you through query string parameters, how they work, and what my recommendation is for getting them right. So let's check it out.
Okay, so let's take a look at the problem that you're going to run into with query string parameters sooner or later. Let's say I have a service. It returns a list of string, like value 1, value 2, and so forth. But let's say that I can return 10,000 strings. Now, if you call my service, you don't really want me to return 10,000 strings. Well, maybe you do, but I don't want to return that to you. So I probably have some kind of default to kind of throttle what I'll return to you. Maybe I'll return 5. And so I have my URI template here, which is just slash, meaning you go to my SVC file. This is the method that's going to get called. Okay, great. But if I return 5 to you the first time, maybe you want to support paging. So the second time you call me, you want to see starting at 6 and get the next 5. So I need to have a query string argument that allows you to specify a starting index. So I put that in here. And now I overloaded the method by just adding another parameter. So it has the same name. WCF doesn't like that very much. So in the operation contract attribute, I can put a name parameter. So I had to give it a different name. I called it test service 1 arg. And then if you say, well, great, a start index is good, but I'd also like to specify my page size or the count as well. No problem. We can do that here in this URI template. And so now I've got a service with start and count and another name, test service 2 arg. Now, the implementation details of this are not important because, frankly, this service will not work. What do you mean, Ron? Well, this is what I mean. When you start this service up, WCF, as it opens the service, validates the contract and says, I can't support this. You've got several methods that have the same path, that slash, but have different query strings. And WCF cannot use the query string parameters to disambiguate services. So you got a problem. This server is never going to run. And that is the issue we have to take care of in this episode of Endpoint TV. Now that we've set up what the problem is, let's talk about the solution. The solution is simple. Do not put query string parameters in your URI template. It just will save you a lot of headache, and you'll eliminate these problems about ambiguous methods because of URI template conflicts. So here's what I do. I just put a simple whatever path in my URI, and then I can still access query string parameters, but you have to do it through the intrinsics that WCF provides out of web operation context.current. So I'll show you a little helper class I created called query string that allows me to access these intrinsic values. Now, query string, I added a bunch of overloads to it. So basically it gets ints or strings. There's the name of the query string parameter and then a default value. That way, if somebody doesn't supply a value in the URI, you'll get the default value. And then it just makes your code a lot simpler and cleaner. So here I'm supporting some paging by having a start index and page size. Then I added kind of a string value. So if you don't want it to say value 1, you can put some other value in the tag and it'll create that. And then to support the paging, I'm using just a little of link to do a little skip to the starting index and then take a certain page size out of the list. That's all I'm doing here. So let's run this up. I'll set a breakpoint on this so we can see it in action. Okay, and so you can see we break into the debugger here where it's calling into get int. This isn't going to be very interesting because no int was provided, but let's take a look at the get int method. So I come into one of the overloads. It calls another overload, where it's going to go off and get the string value. Now, the query string argument comes out as a string value, and here's where you get it from. WebOperationContext.Current.IncomingRequest.URITemplateMatch.QueryParameters. Parameter name is the index. So you can see our index there is start. Now you might be saying, what happens if start's not there? Well, let's see what happens. Does it throw an exception? No, it does not. You might expect it would throw a key not found exception, but it does not. It just returns null. So we do a little check here to say, well, is it a required parameter? No, it's not a required parameter. So in that case, we're going to just use the default value, which in this case is zero. So we'll just go on through, and there you see what our service returns, value 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, I've created a little test page for our service, and if we go here, you'll see some of the things you can do. So there's a number of tests we can do where we'll see good things and so forth. And so here's one where we can go and get values. So let's go and see what it looks like when we do get a value. So in this case, we're going to get the start again. Let's step into that. And we'll go to the other overload. We'll go to get the string. I'm just checking to see here if there is a web operation context, because you might be calling this in some bizarre way that there's not one, and so that would be bad. Then we go off and get the value. In this case, there is a value. It's 3. It's there, so we don't have to mess with default values when we return it. And then what we do is say, well, if it's not null or empty, let's try to convert it to an int. And that might fail, so we'll throw an error. We'll take a look at a case where it does fail a little bit later. So let's step through that and return our value. Okay, and then when we return, we'll just response out of that. So let's hit F5, and now we see we started at 3, we went to 8, we're honoring the request here in the URI. Great, now let's take a look at what happens if you don't do something that you should have done. Like here's a URI where we call into a different operation contract. I put slash required on here, so that we have another method that does have a required parameter. Let's take a look at this one. Here's the one with the required parameter. The QueryString class has another helper called getRequiredString. There's a getRequiredInt. In this case, you could say you have to pass this QueryString parameter. If you don't, it's an error. And in HTTP, the kind of error you would want to return is a HTTP status code of 400, which stands for bad request. So let's set a breakpoint here, take a look at what happens when we invoke that. So let's go over to our browser. Here we go. All right, let's pass the invalid request. So now we're going to get tag. We'll go in here to get string, to get required string rather. Again, check for the context, get the value. In this case, the value is not there. Return value is null, but it is required. So now we're going to call this method set bad request. And we'll pass in a string, an error string, so you can see what goes on there. Now here's how you get at setting that response code. So I'm going to set the web operation context, outgoing response status description and status code to bad request, which is 400. And then we'll say suppress entity body. Just in case there was something already written to the entity body, this value will mean that it won't be sent. And then I'm going to throw an exception, an argument exception. I guess I could have used argument null exception, but I'll pass an argument exception, and this will be caught by WCF. It just means that all the rest of our processing won't happen. But WCF will use the status code that I sent, or that I set in the outgoing response already. So we see that Visual Studio is telling me, hey, you threw an exception. Great, thank you very much. And IE says, that's a bad request. Okay, which is good because it is a bad request. You didn't use the required tag. Now, what happens if you try to call an int but you passed a value that couldn't be converted to an int, like foo here? Well, let's take a look at that. If we F5, we see where we tried to parse it, we couldn't do it. Again, we say set bad request. Throw the argument exception. The browser says, hey, that's a bad request. That's very good. That's what we want to see. So that is a query string, the helper class. A lot of useful help for you there. And there's some interesting things in their unit test that you can run on all kinds of little interesting tidbits of information. Let me just share with you one other kind of interesting tidbit that I learned while building this. You notice that this one with the URI template required has a trailing slash here. I found out that this trailing slash is important, and let me illustrate for you why it's important. If I take it off, I'm going to take it off there and let's run the app again. And we'll remove this breakpoint here so we can press ahead. All right, now if I put on here required, if I can spell it right, without any parameters or anything, you see that we'll drop into our debugger. Let's clear that breakpoint and run it. Yep, we got an argument exception. Okay, that's fine because we didn't include anything. All right, let's put in here a query string parameter, and we'll put in here tag Ron. All right, now you see that it's happy. You put in Ron with quotes and all that. Okay, what happens if I put a trailing slash after required, which is perfectly legal? You would expect to get the same thing, right? But wrong. You don't. You get this message here because WCF now thinks that's a different URI endpoint and it doesn't have a match for it. So the dispatcher is saying, well, I don't have a match for that. This is the reason why I put the trailing slash in here, because with the trailing slash, let's see what it does. Now if I put in here required without the trailing slash, it's fine. Let's take it out. See, it put it back in. So you get the point that you can call it with the slash or without the slash by defining it that way, which is really important. And I did not detect this until I started writing the unit tests for this thing. And so you want to take advantage of those. In fact, if we go in here and run the unit tests, you will see that there are 7 unit tests, and it's telling me that it's throwing exceptions from them and from some of my negative tests. Obviously, you want that. But there they are. 7 of 7 tests passed, so it's all good. That's it. Query string.
Hey, hope you enjoyed that, and the query string class is available for you to download. I've got it available on my site at ronjacobs.com. You can go to the SkyDrive, look for the samples directory in REST, and you'll find it there. There's, of course, a link on my blog as well at blogs.msdn.com/rjacobs. So, hope you enjoyed that. For Endpoint TV, I'm your host, Ron Jacobs.